Hi, welcome to the LaRouche Show of Executive Intelligence Review, the weekly internet radio show where we take up the leading issues with specialists from the LaRouche movement who can discuss Lyndon LaRouche's solutions to the world's crises. Today is March 29th. My name is Michelle Steinberg from EIR, and I'll be your host today to interview Leona Fancheng of Lyndon LaRouche's scientific research team and Marcia Mary Baker, Economics Intelligence Director at EIR. They're going to brief us on the devastating historic drought and Barack Obama's frenzy of fracking, one of the most evil policies in the world today, and how this is part of the Queen of England's global policy of genocide. So I'd like to welcome Leona and Marcia to our program today.
Thanks, Hi. Michelle.
As we start this discussion, I want to briefly focus our listeners on the strategic picture within which this fracking policy is happening. As this week opened and the U.S. Congress returned to Washington, the LaRouche Political Action Committee issued a mass circulation leaflet called "It's the British Empire, Stupid." The leaflet includes a fantastic map that will educate all Americans on the real scope of the British Empire, including its satraps in the Commonwealth and its asset, the impeachable puppet president, Barack Obama. I want to quote briefly from the LPAC leaflet, and then we'll hear directly from Mr. LaRouche, a tape recording he made earlier this week. So the LaRouche PAC leaflet begins. The British Empire is now in a desperate and dangerous existential crisis. To maintain their power in the face of the disintegration of the transatlantic financial system, the British Empire intended to move like a swarm of locusts from Eastern Europe through Russia into China and the rest of Asia, looting, pillaging, and killing along the way. Queen Elizabeth's pathetic little stooge, Barack Obama, was unable to force Russia into submitting to this plan, and in a state of desperation, they are now moving to open up the Eastern Front of Asia. However, Obama is now in a pre-impeachment stage that is being signaled by Senate Democrats, and we intend to get him out before he can start this war for the British Empire. Lyndon LaRouche laid out this shift towards the Eastern Front in a discussion with the LaRouche PAC Policy Committee on March 25th. Let's listen to Mr. LaRouche now.
What happened was the idea was that Russia, and as long as Russia had its own territory intact, for the United States, the British, really, but Obama being involved, but it was British. Mm-hmm. They decided in order to avoid the risk of an actual full-throated Tamuki war, they decided to make an effort, because if they could take the southern flank of Russia and take that southern flank, which coupled over Ukraine, and they could, if they could break Russia there, then they would weaken Russia such that it would weaken the whole flank of Asia. That was the thing. And what Putin stuck to his guns, it blocked doing that. And that was what happened. Now what happens now? They shift now toward an Asian flank. Mm-hmm. They are going against India and China, and hoping that Russia doesn't consolidate, but Russia will with India and China and other countries as well. So that's the kind of situation. And if they don't get that, they're ready to go to full-throated Tamuki war. And if they go to a full-throated Tamuki war, which means transcontinental, there would be very few people actually survive the effects of such a war. And that's why the British have backed off. And this is a British operation. This is not a U.S. operation. It's a British imperial operation. And you have to think of not a Britain as a nation. It's not a nation. It's an empire. It's a global empire. And if you take what they did in India, what they did and have done repeatedly in Africa, what they've done in other parts of the world, you know the British Empire is the most evil force on this planet today and has been for a long time. It has to be destroyed one way or the other. But they now knowing that their whole system is now collapsing with this bail-in process, and they all know what they're doing. They have a policy which the Queen has stipulated repeatedly since the period of the Copenhagen discussions and negotiations. She's been on that kick right away. That's the policy. It is not the policy of this nation, it's the policy of the British Empire. Mm-hmm. And so therefore we have to shadow the British Empire. And we know how to do it in America. Do we have the people with the intellect and guts to do it? We in the United States can destroy the British Empire. We get rid of this bum, Obama, this stooge, this British stooge. Get him out of there. We get enough people to have the guts to throw him out of there, impeach him, throw him into jail where he belongs, for long-term imprisonment. We want him to live a long-term because you want to have a long-term example of what a bum like that represents for generations yet to come. But that's what our real situation is. All the other news reports and so forth are essentially either superficial or garbage. Most of the opinion expressed by the media is an outright lie.
Okay, that was Lyndon LaRouche speaking from the LaRouche PAC Policy Committee taping earlier this week, March 25th. About this strategic crisis, the danger of thermonuclear war, and the impeachment process, the turn against Obama. As Mr. LaRouche has said before, 77 to 80% of the American population hates this president, hates his policies, and there's good reason. And what we're going to talk about today is one aspect of this. Obama's policy of genocide on behalf of the British Empire. And as I mentioned at the beginning, we're talking about fracking. And as we've heard in sometimes in the streets of Washington, the slogan, "Hey Obama, go frack yourself." But we're going to start here. I'm going to ask Leona, what is fracking and why, as your March 21st article is titled, do you call it the economics of extinction?
Okay, yeah, we'll start with what is fracking. Fracking actually is what Mr. LaRouche has called diminishing returns. So it's the result of what happened after we had the oil boom, we had the natural gas boom, and it's come to a point where it's getting harder to access those resources, those fossil fuels. And now we've come up with higher technologies, more effort to get basically the same amount of fossil fuels. So now what they've done, for people who don't know, fracking is they drill down about a mile or two, that's approximately a mile down into shale, into some places the Devonian period, so this is around when fish start to appear. And Then you drill down, then you drill horizontally, which is a new technology, which could be used for other great things other than this, and then send high-pressure water, millions of gallons, 1 to 8 million of gallons per tap, into the ground and fracture, therefore the hydraulic fracturing is what it's called, crack the shale, the stone there, the fossils there, and let the gas then escape and go back through the pipe that they created, the well that they bored. So that's in basic what it is. Now, several things may appear to you odd about this. One is that you're using so much effort now to get something that used to just spew out of the ground. We used to, you know, prior to when we used oil, it was one of those pesky things that when you accidentally came upon it, it would flood your farm or your piece of land and make it entirely useless. But we made use out of it, and that was that at that point was a major discovery. Now, that was a long time ago. Now, we're in modern times, supposedly, and we're 40 years beyond when we should have gone completely nuclear. And now what are we doing? Well, the president has said, okay, our next advance is to go toward solar energy, using flat solar energy, biofuels, burning your corn, your food, at loss, and fracking, using more and more of this fossil fuel, which we know will run out. And right now, I think the approximation was about 100 years, at least, that we could survive at the current rate that we use. We use energy. And recently, USGS just came out and said, well, actually, under the Marcellus Shale, there's about 80% less than we thought there was.
Wow.
And also, the way we're using, I think we've surpassed now in electricity generation, natural gas as a feedstock has surpassed coal a year or so ago. So if you use it even more,
right,
your 100 years goes to 80, goes to who knows.
It's, right.
Yeah.
And they're counting the so-called usage based on the current and completely deindustrialized state that we are now in. So in other words, very, very short term. Now, what else is happening? During this time, we are exporting, we're either maintaining the current state of the deindustrialized state, and we're exporting the material, raw material. So there's all this argument, is exporting good, is exporting bad? Well, if you looked at the colonial policy of the British from the 1700s and 1800s, you know that exporting raw materials is a colonial policy. So we're exporting raw materials, or we're just maintaining the basic operations, like maintaining the practice of fracking, for example, instead of using any amount of energy that we produce or any amount of products that we produce to create the next state of development in the country.
Let me go through some basics, because a lot of people have heard this word fracking all the time,
sure.
And wow, I've already learned a lot in just a couple of minutes about this. One of the first questions that comes to mind: where does this water come from? Because and maybe both of you can answer that from the standpoint of the water crisis that we have and the food crisis that we have, that is both global but especially hitting us here in the U.S. So, where's that water coming from?
Well, you have different shale formations that have been tapped, as Leona described, in the country, especially since the mid-2000s. And so some of it, people have seen, maybe have seen photographs or personally live near it, excuse me, in Pennsylvania, where they have a rainfall pattern usually, and that's the Marcellus Shale Formation. But in fact, the biggest number of taps and shale plays, as they call it, is in Texas, which is in drought, and is in the western states, including the Monterey Shale Formation in California, although, as I said, the biggest number is in Texas. But in other dry land areas, North Dakota, which has part of the Missouri River Basin in it, which is highly up and down from years to years. Excuse me. I'll have to take a break.
Okay.
Yeah, but the main thing is, if you actually map the where they're fracking and where they're planning to do the hydraulic fracturing over the drought areas right now, it's phenomenal. So it's about 50% of the areas that they're fracking are over the drought areas. But now think about this, because the drought areas are, like, for example, the Central Valley of California. This is the eighth largest economy in the world. It used to be the fifth largest. Produces a third of some crops, 90% of, but a third of the crop, fresh fruits and vegetables for the United States. And so measure that value, compare that value. Right now, they said originally 500,000 acres. Now they're saying 800,000 acres may lie fallow because they can't give it water. Now think about how much food that is going to be taken out of the current supply. And think about the prices, how that's going to affect prices, but also just basic availability. And then think about the millions of gallons of water that are being pumped into the ground for this purpose. And they're doing it in these areas that are under this crisis. And this is criminal.
There's a really good alternative that's taking shape on this, which both of you, I'm sure, can talk about, and maybe you a little bit more, because I understand you may be headed to those areas to solve problems sometime in the future, which is, we have some candidates who are taking up this issue. And I must tell everybody, all our listeners, really, really exciting news. If you put in Keisha Rogers, candidate for United States Senate in the upcoming Democratic Party runoff, into a search engine today, you will see a really good interview that Keisha did with Fox News 4 down in Dallas. Beautiful picture, beautiful studio, terrific discussion of Obama, British agent, and the world economic collapse. So Texas and California, we're going to have some candidates running for the U.S. Congress and Senate to address this problem. What are they up to?
This is really important, because when we're talking about an economic, or we're talking about getting out of this crisis, Texas and California are key. And that's why it's so important that we do have, there's Michael Steger and Keisha Rogers. Michael Steger is running in Pelosi's district San Francisco. And so with that one, it's not a local race.
Exactly.
This is the, used to be the Speaker of the House, really, basically.
Now majority leader, whatever they call it, right?
And then Keisha, she's running for Senate. And so this is a statewide, at the minimal, a statewide race. But what they're doing is very strategic, because they're saying, okay, we're creating a presidency. This is a presidential race, and we're taking this from the top down as a nationwide drive. And so, I mean, Texas and California are unique in the sense that they were created, large parts of them, for example, Los Angeles, were created out of the space program. And, like, for example, Los Angeles, they built the shuttles. Large areas, which we now call blue collar, are even at that stage, because they were previously where the aerospace industry flourished from, came out of. And so these are areas which have a high potential to start training and to start building and to start and to actually build up the alternative to the extinction economics we're running right now.
I hope Marcia's back with us now.
Yes, I'm sorry, isn't that? We're getting over winter cold, aren't we?
We hope we're getting over winter.
Yeah, microbes.
Yeah.
But just to these two candidates, as you say, who are leading the charge, Keisha Rogers just sent an address to a meeting that took place in the Congress of Mexico in Mexico City this past Wednesday on the 26th, and about water, because the entire continental picture, this fracking we are addressing today, is an immediate crisis for hundreds of counties in Texas, California, and other places. And we mentioned the food implications, and for many it's just drinking water, being able to live. There are places in New Mexico where people moved out. California has put in place an emergency water trucking program to be on contingency for when they have a list already of many places. Some of them are small, 500 people, trailer court, depends on five wells, four of which have gone dry. So this, for the presidency of the United States to back this, when this is happening to our population, shows the nature of what you began with, Michelle. This is the British Empire in action to allow this to be playing out.
Well, Mr. LaRouche has actually said, and I think it was again last night in the webcast, he said that fracking is a crime against humanity. So I just want to focus again, both of you have touched on it, but please elaborate by what concept of value, what is real value, is this policy wrong? First of all, from what, especially Leonie, what you said, this is a, it's an economics of extinction of the human race, but it's also going to extinct itself, if you will, in a very, very short time. And I don't even know what the geological and long-term consequences of going into these really deep structures of the earth and then blowing them apart. What is that going to mean in the future? Well, let's not go there right now because we have a lot to discuss just in terms of the policy, but you know, listeners can think about it and read the EIR articles. Leona Fang Chen has an article in the March 21st issue of EIR, Fracking, the Economics of Extinction, with some fantastic graphics discussing anti-entropy and this whole question of U.S. gas exports. So let's get to this. What is real value? Why is fracking wrong in that context? And what is real progress? So,
okay,
go
well,
ahead.
Let's get at extinction from a couple of different levels, short term, medium term, and long term. So we already touched upon the short term. Short term is we're running out of water in half of the country, half which has a lot of the population, or has a huge population, and both that we're running this type of policy, which is wasting water basically at this point, and then two, that there's no response in the other direction to provide water. So there's no, at the point where really only an emergency reaction, an emergency call on the federal level to relieve this crisis would help or would be adequate, there is no real adequate response out of this federal government. So that's one thing. Two, on a more medium term, I mentioned briefly that, you know, any type of output that you put out at any one time should be used for developing your next stage. Otherwise, you run into attrition. Otherwise, you run into a point where you're just sustaining your current use. It's like, I use this example of the couch potato, who doesn't want to make any investment at all. So the couch potato just sits there and doesn't want to go out and drive because that will cost money, and doesn't want to buy a new suit because that'll cost money, and so on. And therefore, just sits there and uses up whatever savings he had until he runs out. Then he doesn't even have the potential to get off the couch and do something. But this works on a much larger level in the sense that the way that we've advanced is we used, yes, previous types of fuel like coal, natural gas, the other mostly fossil fuels, in order to sustain a type of development within the society that would make the technological and scientific advances to get into the new level. When we don't do that, we eventually run out of what we had as a fuel, and you can't. We run into a point where you can't make that advance. And we see the effects on different levels. So for example, right now, the way we're seeing the effect is both in fracking, the practice of fracking. So using the resources we have in order to try to get at a resource that would have been, was simple to get before and is harder to get at now. You also see it in offshore drilling. This is very similar. You know, where you can't drill on land anymore, you have to get into, you have to create all these new technologies and hire a lot of people to drill really deep in the under ocean and
in the Arctic
and so on. You're going through new heights in order to get at the same old fuel that you did before. And you're not advancing the nation at the same time. And so therefore you get these, you get the effect is now what we're seeing, which is an inability to deal with a crisis like this, the drought. Now the droughts aren't uncommon. They're not a freak of nature or anything like that. In fact, they're very natural in some sense. What's unnatural is a human inability in this century to be able to deal with something like that, which is something we can forecast. We can forecast there will be a drought, right? That's something that has occurred before. We can forecast that there will be an ice age. That we've seen before, and there's cycles of that and things like that. And so, but we're not dealing with that. And you see these things that come on as seemingly short-term problems, but are really products of a longer-term, it's not even an underdevelopment, it's an opposition to development.
Yes, that is a crucial idea. That is, I'm really glad you mentioned it, because it's kind of a dark age policy. And let me ask you both to comment. It's not directly on fracking per se, but it is on this whole question of what is a human being really? What the science group has been really working with Lynn on. What is a human being? What is creativity? What is the human mind? Last night, Mr. LaRouche, in his final answer in the webcast, he kind of gave a cultural call to arms. The question was about the culture of despair, of nihilism, reflected in a recent epidemic of student suicides in New York City, New York City public schools. And what Mr. LaRouche talked about was cultural optimism, science, real progress, orientation to the future. These are what the alternatives are, right? And I say we're going backwards because it seems to me that, and I know from working with Marcia over the years, California would be a desert today. The Central Valley, the Imperial Valley, would not be producing food if it were not for just miraculous technological and scientific visions to irrigation, and we've lost that. So instead of that, we're expanding the desert with this solar energy of Barack Obama and his greeny new age insanity. It doesn't even work. Fracking is going to run out before it works, and he's touting it as a energy independence. We are now independent. Look, you both know I cover the Middle East. We are not independent by a long shot. It's a joke, and it's not going to last very long. But this idea of the culture of despair versus what really are human beings, let's talk about that a little bit and get into the whole question of the kind of energy that we really need instead of fracking. Fusion power.
Yeah, sure.
NOAPA, nuclear NOAPA, these are.
Yeah, I think if we take, this is where we start to see, this is the longer term thing, which really is where we see the deficit. Sometimes, you know, I'll step back for a second, which is that we do run into people who argue for fracking. And largely because there are some people are getting something from it. They've got a job in it where they didn't have a job before. Maybe you were an engineer doing something and now you're engineering something for the fracking industry and so on. But you've been thrown a bone and they're trying to take everything else away from you, the food, the water, your sovereignty, your freedom, and your future, and they've thrown you a bone, and you've taken it. And a lot of the arguments I get is, well, it's created jobs for us, what are we going to do without this energy, and things like that. Now, though, step 50 years ahead, set 50 years ahead and think of where, really where we should have been now, but where we will be in 50 years, and look back. And I think from that standpoint, it's a little easier to maybe laugh at ourselves and say, oh, geez, why did I think that? Because one, we should have already conquered fusion at this point. Fission was something we conquered in the 50s. We built nuclear power that was online. We had nuclear power. It was in the grid and so on. We still have the most, though it's dwindling. So at the time where we should have been using our nuclear power, nuclear fission plants, to power all of our research in plasma and fusion, we went into green insanity and stopped that. And now fusion's still floundering as a research, at an R&D stage, now, still, in the 21st century. And so let's say we get into 2050, we've conquered the process of the sun and more, and we can transform atoms at that level, at the subatomic level, meaning we can perform transmutation. We've gotten to a point where the precious fossil fuels, which are limited, are used for better purposes like petromaterials. So petroleum should be used for petromaterials, natural gas has many, many other uses, which are 100% efficiency as opposed to 30% efficiency upon burning. And I'm not sure what, coal we actually still use for metallurgy and for its chemical properties, though. Although some of that we can replace if we had fusion as well, and even just higher generations of fission. But those things, for example, the fossil fuels would have a completely different value and a completely different use in this new, in a new platform. In the platform built on a society which has conquered the sun. If you think about it that way, then look back, and you've got to say, "I've been robbed."
Right.
And the way this has been sold, we can get into naming the dirty names like Dirty Dick Cheney and some other history, but. Just what Leona says about the individual engineer or worker, we know them. West Virginia, Texas, Pennsylvania, North Dakota, people are there desperate to have jobs. It's considered a success because all your town's motel rooms are full and you're renting out your rooms up over your garage and you're making money. This is called success. This was sold, for example, to Pennsylvania as a way to balance its budget. The capital of Pennsylvania, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, once one of the keystone, that's what it's called, states of the colonies, and then the easternmost of the Great Lakes powerhouse, is so poor its state capital can't balance its budget. So Pennsylvania, as well as Texas, was foremost in approving anything goes when it comes to fracking. Hmm. So, and now, the way that, you've mentioned energy independence, that dates you a little, Michelle. That was the game a few years ago. She I was there before you.
Yeah, it was like Nelson Rockefeller or something. No, but
now
Obama,
they call it foreign policy.
Obama is saying
fracking
too,
is our
right?
foreign policy. Yes, yeah. But he's also saying, this is the new geopolitical imperative. Not only mm-hmm. will we be independent, you're right, I'm not dissing you on this, but this is the way we're going to be the leader of the world. This is the way we're going to roll Russia back. We're going to stick Putin's gas up his something or other. And this was the speech that Obama gave this week in Belgium and The Hague when he was in Europe. We are going to, Russia must obey us when it comes to pulling out of Crimea and Ukraine, and we're going to export more of this gas from our fracking boom in the U.S. It's time Europe developed its own fracking assets. We're also going to have, and he went in, David Cameron gave a speech then very soon after Obama saying, we're going to do this in the British Isles. By the end of the year, we're going to be fracking. And they say because the localities in Britain, the little Middlesex villages and farms, they don't have any income. This way will allow them to keep up to 100% of the royalties in their area. So this is just the crassest kind of...
I think this is really important because this is where you have an intersection of this culture of extinction with the immediate danger of thermonuclear war. Because I think the idiots in Congress and other parts of society who are looking for this showdown with Russia, showdown with China, actually believe this nonsense.
Yes, and
yeah, so elaborate.
You may add to this too, because you follow this dangerous cockpit of potential war in Southwest Asia so closely. On March 25, Tuesday morning, the Senate had a two-hour hearing by the Senate Energy Committee. Its new chair is Mary Landrieu from Louisiana. That's a fracking export state. So even though she has in the past exerted leadership when it comes to, for example, we need infrastructure so we don't suffer from another Katrina or a Sandy on the issue by issue, she has taken some leadership. No, she was saying, we are going to be leading the liquefied natural gas export, Sabine Pass. We have the first approved LNG export site. It's going to be up and running in late 2015. It was approved by Obama in 2010. The Obama administration approved another site. This is where you have to take natural gas and liquefy it in order to export it abroad, and then you regasify it at its destination. So for 2 hours, different senators held forth against Russia, against Vladimir Putin, and saying we're going to wield our geopolitical advantage of this new shale gale boom in the United States. On Monday, the Obama administration on the 24th of March approved an export terminal in Oregon. They have 23 sites pending to export it. Now, it may take 5 to 7 years to build one of these facilities, but the Obama administration and the senators all said, this will send a signal to Russia that we're now tough and they can't fool around. And this will send a signal to our allies in Europe, which has 22 regasification plants, that will be your new supplier eventually. And it's said, and many of the senators who spoke said this will send a signal to Wall Street that we're good investments.
It definitely sends a signal to Wall Street that they're going to kiss their butts. But the main, yeah, I think what Obama said about why we should do this, his comparison, actually he slipped too, his comparison with, he said, the United States is going to be the Saudi Arabia of natural gas.
Oh, great.
Yeah, who wants to be like Saudi Arabia? Okay. And that's the main thing, is it's actually very accurate. His idea, I don't know if he even understands how accurate his own comparison was, because think about what Saudi Arabia does with their oil. They definitely don't develop their nation with it. They what they are doing is exporting raw materials, being a backward nation, using the funds that they're exporting with the raw materials to fund terrorism, to create geopolitical chaos, and amongst that, attacking Russia with it, by going after the underbelly.
Absolutely.
And so on.
Yeah, continue, yeah.
And so that is fair. Does that sound familiar to you now upon reading or experiencing U.S. news at this point? I mean, that's the intention. And so.
Well, it's an oligarchy. It's an absolute autocratic system, and that's what Obama has been doing against the Constitution, right?
Yeah, and then at that point, you see that it's very logical why a young person who's seeing this as its future would not want to be around. And that's what we have to change. We have to just be able to tell young people, no, this is your future. Your future is being able to be the creative species that you are, and being able to garden the solar system and so on. And that if you have a young generation like that, that's, you know, where the engineers are not spending time making new technologies to horizontally drill for fracking, but are using that same know-how to bore a huge hole for Nawapa or to design something magnificent for a nuclear society or something like that, or for fusion rockets to go to Mars or so on, that's a different type of future and a different type of reorganization of your labor force, your training, the type of tests even that you would give to a student in education, in your educational field and so on. It would reshape everything.
Yes, and I think in the end, it was an older generation person, a Vietnam veteran, who wrote in a blog post this week, but commenting on the prospect for, why should we send our young people, our young men and women, to yet another war front so Chevron can frack in Ukraine? They have, Chevron and Royal Dutch Shell have contracts.
Oh, that is insightful, yeah.
And it's because it's to any age now, we've had such an example of British applied colonial warfare in action, of being induced to Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, and then threaten war on Syria, all so that we can have, the world can be free to frack and have free markets, and we can, so I know this makes sense. Anytime there's a vision, as you just laid out, Leona, for someone, friends of ours were this week organizing for impeachment Obama in West Virginia in the fracking counties in Fairmont and southeastern Ohio. That's part of the Marcellus Shale and one of the other formations. And many of the young people, one was a coal miner, others who were working on the fracking field. Wow, Nawapa, that's what we ought to be doing. So if you have a chance to see, you have a chance to have a human identity, and then your skills and your orientation can really go.
Let's just take a minute, because there may be some new listeners and new EIR subscribers with us today, and going to learn more about fracking. Let's just take a minute to talk more about the Nawapa plan that we have, the number of jobs it'll create, and basically what it is. Marcia, you want to start on that?
Well, yeah, because in a way it takes us back to when we had...
It goes back to 1965.
The California hydrologist said we're going to run out of water once we build the whole California water project. And that was pretty much built out by the 1970s. So the chief hydrologist of California and others got together, and then they got together with Parsons Engineering. And by 1963 and 64, Congress was hearing it. There are thick congressional printing office reports on the outlook, where you take water from the heavy rainfall areas of the northwestern part of North America, which is in the Yukon, Alaska, and British Columbia, collect it up there, run it southward, taking advantage of the deformation they call the Rocky Mountain Trench, and building a big collection complex of dams, but then bringing it in Montana, Idaho, and then diverting it continued southward. Sometimes you need big lift pumps there, but you continue southward so that water can be supplied to the very dry southwest, even into Mexico, and also in portions of California, and you can do other things in the Canadian prairie provinces. And all of this at the time was worked out without the presumption of nuclear power integrated within this big North American water and power lines. It had a lot of hydropower, but at the same time, they presumed there would be nuclear power desalination on the seacoasts. So this was the view in the 1960s at the time of President Kennedy, who supported it, Senator Robert Kennedy, his brother. We know that was a turning point decade. They were murdered by the enemies of our nation, and then the program was shelved. But yeah, there would be millions of jobs. And so now, in the last 2 years, the LaRouche Political Action Committee and collaborators and associates of Leona's have the NWAPA 21, the nuclear NWAPA 21, and have looked at it by integrating nuclear power with this concept and updating it in consultation with engineers and others. And that's on our agenda. That's what matters in our country. And it goes, we can say more about it now, but I just want to point out before the hour goes by that those decades between the 60s to the present, there's a history of just the most, some of the famous names. I mentioned Dick Cheney under Bush and different individuals before then, deliberately not only seeing that this North American Water and Power Alliance was shelved, but intervening in the economy in ways to make way for fracking, because that's on a large scale that only happened in recent years, but just undermining the organization of our economy through deregulation and other things. We could point out the short history of that just to make it real to people.
Okay, and the the immediate crisis that we're facing with the drought, because this is what the population often asks us about, well, what are you going to do right now, right? And you know, how are we going to have the food? Because people see the food prices just escalating, going through the stratosphere. And people are already unemployed, limited incomes, and so forth. And they see this getting worse and worse. The campaigns that we mentioned, Mike Steger, Keisha Rogers, and the fight for Obama's impeachment are all relevant to this. And NWAPA is actually part of a package that we're all familiar with, Glass-Steagall, a national bank, and the physical economy. I'd like to ask you, Leona, to talk a little bit more about the overall work that has been presented on the New Paradigm weekly broadcast and the scientific research team, all your different projects, because again, this question of giving a future, not just to the youth, but to middle-aged people. I mean, look at the veterans coming back from Afghanistan, Iraq, the number of military suicides, despair, and so forth. We need Lyndon LaRouche's outlook, his solutions, and I know that we have to use every opportunity to get this into the public. So please just tell us everything you can about the exciting work that's going on.
Yeah, the main thing is that Mr. LaRouche has given us a responsibility, and it's not just us a responsibility. He's pointed out that the human species is the only one we know that is creative. And that means being able to discover real scientific principles and create circumstances where things can be done that couldn't have otherwise been done by the universe. So in other words, you are helping in the creation process. And in that way, giving power to things that it didn't prior. And so, for example, the one I mentioned earlier was petroleum. So petroleum, we gave it value. It went from fossil, which was basically thrown away. It was something. It's a byproduct of life, to creating energy for humans, for the noosphere, and then to being able to become a petromaterial. So that's going into almost everything you know. I mean, everything that's plastic, your cell phone has it, your mouse pad has it, and everything, almost everything you can think of has some aspect of petromaterial in it.
Driving your car every day.
Your car, your medical devices, all sorts of things. So it has an amazing value to the universe that didn't exist before due to humans. And because we're the only ones so far that we know of that have that capability in the universe, we have the responsibility to use it well. And that is a huge responsibility that when you look at it from that standpoint, back at then what we're doing right now, you say, wow, that's a real waste. Why aren't we doing this now? What are we doing? Then you can see why Mr. LaRouche fights so hard. He's over his 90s, or he's in his 90s, and he still continues to put out papers constantly on the subject. The last paper that he wrote, I think, is a really good summary of the type of challenge that he's posed to us and really to all the entire species. He put out a paper, I forget exactly the whole name of it, but it's on Bertrand Russell.
And it is the cover story of this current EIR. So people who are listening to the LaRouche Show on the LaRouchePub.com website can actually see that picture of Bertie Russell. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
This is a very important paper. It's not that long. It's a very important paper to read because Mr. LaRouche goes through the entire history of science. And you may think, oh, the entire history of science, that should be thousands and thousands of pages. But no, he says it very succinctly because what he understands as science are the turning points. Everything else is just extrapolation. It's just taking a discovery and applying it, which has its uses too. But he identifies the crux of where we are at now through really about 8 people who made major discoveries, starting with Plato and Filippo Brunelleschi, who built the dome, the giant dome.
Dome in Florence.
The dome in Florence, yeah.
Brunelleschi's dome.
Nicholas of Cusa, and he names only about a few people. Probably the most recognized ones would be Max Planck and Albert Einstein, and then recognized for Russians would be Vladimir Vernadsky. And so just a very few people, he says, look, if you look at how these people contributed to science, then you will know all of science. Then you also know not just all of science, but you also know what our role is now in carrying out that legacy, carrying out that challenge. The current challenge he's posed is that Max Planck made a major discovery about the small, about quantization in the small, and not just quantization, but a character of space that had not been thought of before. And then that Einstein made a different discovery, a related but a different discovery for the large. And the resolution between those two discoveries has not really been made yet. That the large and the small have not been brought together as one universe, one creative universe, the way that Johannes Kepler did it before. Now that'll take a whole session on its own, which people should do. You can call in and find out how to do that. But he's in that very short amount of time has really, or just a few pages, has posed a major challenge for all of humanity as far as progress goes and as far as being able to fulfill this creative responsibility.
It seems to me, in these final minutes, I'm just thinking what you're describing in this largest history of mankind, history of science, this paper by LaRouche on Bertrand Russell, and so, who's of course the enemy. It throws into perspective that this fracking we're talking about is subversion. It's deliberate subversion. You've gone through how it isn't scientific. It's not an advancement. It's not. But that's where we get to the idea of, even if we escape having nuclear war for another X years, this fracking is destroying us and it's subverting nations. And of course, that's where I mentioned Dick Cheney. You look back at the last 40 years when we were going to build 200 or 300 nuclear plants. We only built 104. Now we only have about 100. We're going down, down, down in everything, using less coal, using more. And Dick Cheney's personal career, he was Energy Task Force Director
right.
in early 2001 for 3 or 4 months at a time when Texas, London, Wall Street, British, Bush family connected companies were making 400% profit from 1 year to the next. 400 from year first quarter 2000 to 2001. I just looked it up. Reliant Energy. You could tick off these names.
And the Enron era.
Enron.
Also, yeah.
This was the Enron era. Enron Trading was making, and the Californians' price they were paying for electricity, and they had blackouts, was going sky high for 35 million people. And Cheney, of course, did nothing. Now it's not just that. He continued in his task force report that came out that year, came out 2001, was another report after Enron had declared bankruptcy. It's all a bubble and a ripoff. They continued policies that began in that late 60s, early 70s period of complete deregulation of our entire energy sector of our nation. 1978 was the Natural Gas Act that got rid of any federal control or right to control pricing for necessary extraction, exploration and extraction of gas and oil. We had already got rid of parity pricing for agriculture goods. We got rid of national supervision for interstate commerce. We got rid of, we kept getting rid of all this deregulation. The 1980s, Margaret Thatcher was an extreme case of it in Britain internationally, of so-called free markets. 1990s, still more of the same, that the federal government would not regulate the natural gas mining, that would be states. Then it came into the decade of 2000 and the 2005 Energy Act that promoted biofuels and allowed still more anything goes on natural gas. This is the chronology of this is the subversion of having a sovereign government. So no wonder that we come up right to where we are now, and we've heard this hideous thing of Obama in Europe, David Cameron of England, saying we're going to take over the world through our new gas boom. It would be a funny horror movie.
And we're all Saudis now. I mean,
oh, yeah, that's right. Excuse me.
A nightmare. We are running out of time. I think we have about 1 minute left. And before I give you a chance to say a final word, literally a word, I just want to say again, Marcia Baker, Mary Baker, co-author of an EIR article this week, U.S. Western Water Crisis Means World Food Shortage. Leona Fancheng, author of Fracking, The Economics of Extinction in EIR Magazine, March 21st. I think we're going to have more science-oriented programs on The LaRouche Show. Anybody at any age, not just people under 25 or under 50, can learn this Promethean idea against the oligarchy. And thank you both for being here. You both have 10 seconds if you want to say anything else.
Okay, I just wanted to say, of all of the things that we've discussed, that it's key. It's important to remember that what we're dealing with right now is the death rattle of an empire. That we're dealing with these crises because they're also the end of something. They're the end of is it's an empire's system. And what that means is it gives us a really great opportunity, which is that one, you can identify it as that one thing, and two, if you're conscious of it, you can separate yourself from that and let the empire implode on itself and come out of it on the other side. If you're not conscious of it, you will let the empire take you down with it, which is what all these policies we're seeing right now is attempting to do.
So the empire is dying. It's in its death throes. And we have to bring about a new system. And that begins with the impeachment and the removal of this president, Barack Obama. EIR, the LaRouche Movement, that is your central headquarters for this battle campaign. Call in, write to us, become part of this movement. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.